Well, there you are, Little Brother Montgomery and the Yankee Doodle Blues. Isn't that patriotic? It was from 1976, our bicentennial as well, on a disc called At Home with Little Brother Montgomery. Plus, we heard from Frank Frost, the Jelly Roll King himself. There he is with Baby, You're So Kind, Frank Frost here on the Deep Blues Hour. Let's hear next from Tampa Red. Been featuring this song lately. This is an ace record out of the UK. It's called Dynamite, the Unsung King of the Blues. This is My First Love Blues from Tampa Red on the Deep Blues Hour.
I believe to my soul, my God. Black cat bone. I believe to my soul, my girl's got a black cat bone. Cause every time I leave, sure got to go back home. I've tried so hard never more to call her name. Tried so hard never more to call her name. But she got a sweet way of loving that will drive any man insane. She's the first gal I ever loved, the last one I ever will. First gal I love, and the last one I ever will. Cause love is a thing that will get somebody killed. Play me some blues now.
What kind of help does the IRS have for identity theft victims?
If you suspect you're a victim of tax-related identity theft, go to irs.gov/identity theft to learn how to prevent potential refund fraud and protect your tax account. At the IRS, combating tax-related identity theft is a top priority, and we are committed to prevention, detection, and assisting victims. And we're working with law enforcement to catch the criminals. For more info, go to irs.gov/identity theft to learn what the IRS is doing to help protect you.
I'll be with you till the cows come home. Don't let me catch you, woman, getting out wrong. Don't you lie to me. Don't you lie to me. You make me so mad I get evil of the making me. You ask me till you hold your head, a pint of gin, you said, never ask you back, John, again. Don't you lie. Don't you lie to me. make me so mad. I get evil as a man can be. All right, baby. Money 1922. Let those people make a fool of you. Don't you lie to me. Don't you lie to me, darling. You make me so mad I get evil as a man can be.
It's a very serious problem, and one that faces all of us. Fortunately, here at WRCT Pittsburgh, we broadcast from a steel-reinforced concrete basement. So we'll be playing music long after your sorry corpse has evaporated in a blinding flash of light and heat. I hope this thought comforts you. WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM.
So the big news cycle over the last 16, 18 hours or so is that it is here. It is here. Omicron has been confirmed in the United States. Now, is this meaningful? We don't know. Is it newsworthy in the sense of, is it surprising? It's probably already been here for some weeks. And number three, does this finding make us question the prudency of the travel bans that have been put in place? We're going to talk about all of these different questions, but the big news, and we're kind of in the Omicron. Now I'm saying it the way Biden said it the other day. Omicron, which Joe Biden referred to as the Omicron. Omicron is here in the United States. And now we're in the Omicron found in this state, and soon Omicron found in that state phase of the story without yet knowing what that actually means. So CNBC reporting yesterday, CDC confirms first case of Omicron COVID variant in California. The CDC said Wednesday it confirmed the first U.S. case of the new heavily mutated coronavirus variant called Omicron detected in Northern California. White House Chief Medical Advisor Anthony Fauci said the patient, who was fully vaccinated, had just returned to the San Francisco area November 22nd after traveling in South Africa, tested positive November 29. The timing, given that they got back at this point, what is that, 8-10 days ago, suggests it's probably been here for some time. The individual is self-quarantining and all close contacts have been contacted and thus far have tested negative. We feel good that this patient not only had mild symptoms, but actually had the symptoms appear to be improving. That is good news. The article, because it is CNBC, mentions that there was a big swing in the stock market yesterday after this case was confirmed. And this is one of those things where it's sort of like, really, guys? Like, the idea is that at any time, the stock market reflects all known information about the state of the economy. Or companies that are at least measured by the stock market. Is it really news that there was one case found in the United States? I mean, when almost a week ago or even longer, no, about a week ago, we said it's probably already here. A 500 plus point swing because of the announcement seems to me like not a particularly efficient market, given that any reasonable person would have inferred there's going to be cases here, and we still don't yet know how serious they are. Now, that's the next thing that I want to talk about. We are starting to anecdotally get information about the believed severity of Omicron cases and whether this means we're headed in some kind of terrible direction or whether this might actually be a milder variant. There are more and more, even from this morning, anecdotal claims that those who are vaccinated don't really have to worry more about Omicron. Whatever level you were worried before is the level you should be worried now. But that if you're unvaccinated, you should worry. We're starting to see more and more. That story is being told more and more, although it is not yet a story that we can definitively confirm. For example, South Africa expert: previous infection doesn't protect against Omicron, but shots do. People infected with earlier variants of COVID do not appear to be protected against Omicron, but vaccination will prevent serious illness, a top South African scientist says. We believe that previous infection does not provide protection from Omicron, says Anne von Gottberg, expert at the National Institute for Communicable Diseases in South Africa. Outlining early research into the newly emerged variant, she says doctors are seeing an increase for Omicron reinfections. We believe the number of cases will increase exponentially in all provinces of the country. That's South Africa with a low vaccination level. We believe that vaccines will still, however, protect against severe disease. That's really the whole story at this point in time. So now let's kind of summarize. Omicron has been here for weeks. This is an individual who came back from South Africa November 22nd. If we believe that they brought it from South Africa, rather than we don't know what their connection was, maybe they got it from someone else. It's in a whole bunch of countries, and it already was on November 22nd. It's likely been here for weeks. Number two, the question as to whether it is milder or not remains an open question, because with every claim right now, there is a counterclaim. Most of the cases in South Africa are mild. Well, but most of the cases in South Africa are in young people so far that we know of, and you need 10, 14 days to see what the disease progression is. Well, a lot of the cases in South Africa are in the unvaccinated. Well, that's because a lot of the young are unvaccinated in South Africa. Is one the cause or is one the effect? We just don't know at this point in time. Is it not more deadly on an infection fatality rate basis, but by being more transmissible, more people will die because more people will get it, right? We don't know the answer to that at this point in time. Do vaccines protect at all against serious disease? Well, what about the third dose? If you have the third dose, are you more protected against Omicron? It seems so from early data, but we still don't know. And then the third piece of this is, what does this mean about travel bans? Because there is at this point a situation where South Africa did the right thing by saying, hey, we sequenced this, we found this, this is a new variant. And, oh, well, it came from South Africa. It's now not even totally clear. It might have come from European countries and it might have been brought to South. Because South Africa was the first to say it, South Africa and Southern Africa are being punished in terms of travel bans when it's everywhere anyway, right? The travel bans seem to happen at a time when it's already spread. They are of unclear efficacy at actually doing the thing they're supposed to do. And by the time we have this much information, it seems to already be too late. So there's a real question as to the wisdom of these kind of targeted travel bans. Everything remains preliminary. And the people who haven't been paying attention or modifying their behavior or getting vaccinated all along are, generally speaking, not going to do anything differently. I do believe that even the hyperbolic claims, which are not yet backed by evidence about Omicron, will get some people who are unvaccinated to go and get vaccinated, but not a whole bunch of them. Curious to hear from you if you agree. Stacey Abrams has announced she is again going to run for Georgia governor in 2022. This is actually sort of exciting. I have to tell you, I kind of like this. The Atlanta Journal-Constitution reporting Stacey Abrams is running for governor in 2022. She launched her campaign yesterday with a pledge to fight for economic equality and expand health care access, setting up a potential rematch against Republican Governor Brian Kemp in one of the nation's most competitive political battlegrounds. So what does that mean, potentially a rematch? Remember that there was this crazy situation where Stacey Abrams, Democrat, ran against Brian Kemp, Republican, in Georgia for the governorship, and Brian Kemp won. What was crazy about that race is that at the time, Brian Kemp was the Secretary of State of Georgia, meaning that Brian Kemp as Secretary of State was overseeing the election in which the same Brian Kemp, Republican candidate for governor, was a candidate. Absolutely insane. Allegations of foul play running rampant, and many concerns that it could be even worse this time because of something called SB 202, which we're going to talk about in a moment. Now, why is it a possible rematch against Brian Kemp for Stacey Abrams? Well, it's possible because first, Stacey Abrams has to win her Democratic primary in Georgia. And secondly, because Brian Kemp has to win his Republican primary. Now, you could say, David, these both of those things are likely to happen. I wouldn't disagree with you, but we don't yet know for sure. Kemp has announced he's running for re-election. Now, it's cliche at this point to say it, but the outcome will likely depend on turnout, as it often does in these state races. And we now certainly have to talk about SB 202. SB 202 is a voting law. How can I even say it? It's a voting rules law, comprehensive, that affects a bunch of different aspects of voting in the state of Georgia. For example, as of SB 202, which was passed after Stacey Abrams lost that race, the earliest voters can request mail-in ballots is 11 weeks before the election instead of 180 days. That's like less than half as much time. The final deadline to complete an application for a mail-in ballot has been moved earlier. Counties will start mailing out the absentee ballots about 3 weeks later than before, starting only 4 weeks before the election. So they're compressing and limiting the ways and schedules on which people can make can vote absentee and request those ballots. Requesting and returning a ballot will also be subject to new stricter voter ID rules. There are changes to early voting, which in Fulton County, which is a key Democratic county, you will no longer be able to use one of two mobile voting buses in that county, which were purchased to help with long lines. Access to those is being restricted. So that's not good for Democrats. So the plus of this potential rematch between Stacey Abrams and Brian Kemp is Brian Kemp won't also be the Secretary of State running the election. That's good for Stacey Abrams. Not so good for Stacey Abrams is SB 202, which is a series of changes that on balance do not help. Forget about do not help. Hurt Democrats. Straight up hurt Democrats. I think Stacey Abrams is a great candidate. And one of the things she has going for her since she last ran are some major successes. When you look at the two, what was the date now? January 5th of this year, special Senate elections in which Raphael Warnock and John Ossoff won, defeating Republican incumbents. Stacey Abrams gets much of the credit for those wins, participating in massive voter registration efforts, successful ones at that. I think she's a very solid candidate. She speaks to voters in a way that is both relatable, but not from a condescending place, but also really clearly. She, in that sense, she's an interesting kind of has an interesting delivery and way to that she relates to voters. So I'm very excited about this race. We've got the Texas gubernatorial race where Beto O'Rourke is running, and there's real questions as to whether he's the right candidate. I actually think that Stacey Abrams is the right candidate in Georgia. And we're going to be following that race very closely. The midterms are really shaping up to be very interesting. I was speaking to our YouTube rep yesterday, and I said, at first, I didn't know from like a public interest standpoint, how interested will our audience and the country be in these midterm elections. Now, as a lot of these specific races are starting to take shape, this could be one of the most followed midterm elections overall in a very, very long time. Let me know your thoughts. You can find me on Twitter at dpacman. Remember that December 14th at 6 p.m. Eastern, we'll be doing the next David Pacman Show viewer town hall. It will be streaming live on our second YouTube channel, Pacman Live. Make sure you're subscribed there. We'll take a break and be back with much more after this. Remember that you can join the discussion on the David Pakman Show subreddit at davidpakman.com/reddit. I want to look at a couple of posts that I spotted this morning. This is really funny because this is now becoming an ongoing issue. This post says, David, your videos on YouTube no longer display the number of dislikes. I guess YouTube has finally rolled this feature out. Is there no way of opting out so we can visibly see the dislikes? I feel that having dislikes not shown may lead some in the audience to believe David is hiding the dislikes. Oh, it's not. It may. I am getting emails, voicemails, and tweets saying, David, you coward, hiding your dislikes in order. Guys, YouTube rolled out this policy. I did nothing. The post goes on to say it creates an issue surrounding a channel's transparency to allow dislikes and negative reception. I know David would never try to silence his audience in this manner, but this decision by YouTube may have a blowback effect on channel like David's, with people commenting dislike or why did you remove the dislikes? It's not that it may. People are already saying, why did you remove dislikes? We have no control over it. This was a YouTube decision. I could not care less about it. I already was never looking at the dislikes. I actually could. There, it's funny. About a month and a half ago, I was looking through our video manager and I saw you could rank videos by the percentage likes. And in general, our videos have like 95% likes or something like that. And I was like, huh, I could be looking to see what videos have more dislikes if I cared about it. And then I just moved on. So the idea that I'm even looking at dislikes is kind of funny to begin with. But yeah, it has nothing to do with anything we've done. It's a YouTube policy, and that's basically it. Next post. What exactly is this open border? Does anyone know this argument? We've all heard conservatives point to this crazy, unruly open border that's Biden's fault. What changed at the border? I've never seen the U.S. under any president have an open border, and I don't understand the argument. Aren't we still deporting people and turning them away? Isn't the process to get citizenship highly complex and lengthy? I always hear people say we have an open border and we give immigrants money, health care and education. Where exactly is that happening? Is this all made up or is there some factual basis for the claim? So the truth is there has been nothing, and it's actually mentioned in a comment in this Reddit post. We've had nothing approximating an open border of any kind for about 100 years. There are countries that do, although I'm not up to exactly where it stands right now. My birth country of Argentina, for a long time, I'm not going to say it's exactly this way now because I'm not sure, but for a long time, anyone could basically go, and assuming that within, I don't remember if it was a year or two, you either are able to get enrolled in a university or are able to find a job. That's your path to legal status in Argentina. Now, it's not like Argentina is the U.S. and everybody's trying to go to Argentina. Not that everybody's trying to go to the U.S., but there's a lot more people trying to come to the U.S. than to go to Argentina. But no, the Post is right. There is not an open border. Even the process for requesting asylum is not a particularly short or easy process. There is no open border, and it's just another one of these vapid right-wing talking points that works on a lot of people. Lastly, David, sir, if the Supreme Court rules against Roe v. Wade, does Biden have a green light to expand the court? We can make the case that morally, Joe Biden has a case to expand and pack the Supreme Court. We can make a case that legally and politically he does, but I don't think he's going to do it. If you give me, as I like to say, I'm not a betting man, but if you give me an even money bet, does Joe Biden add justices to the Supreme Court? I'm taking the no. I think it's I just don't think he has any interest in doing it. If you disagree with me, certainly let me know. And you can join the discussion at davidpakman.com/Reddit. More than we're around, I think, 33,000 of our viewers and listeners are subscribed to the subreddit. Great place for respectful discussion of politics and news. DavidPakman.com/Reddit. Okay, this is super interesting. There are hundreds of cases against alleged Trump rioters from January 6th right now. Hundreds of cases. There has now been a decision by the judge in the case to release the police interrogation video of one of the accused rioters, a man named Danny Rodriguez. Danny Rodriguez, many in my audience thought this was like a kid, like barely an adult. I did too. Turns out it's a 38-year-old man. Danny Rodriguez has admitted to being the individual who tased Officer Michael Fanone, who was one of the three or four officers who testified before the committee investigating the January 6th riots. We're going to look at some clips of the police interviews. Some call them interrogations, and they are interesting in a number of ways. In terms of the police interviewing techniques, they are all completely standard. When I streamed some of these clips yesterday, there were people in the chat saying everything here is crazy that the police are doing, and others saying this is all totally standard. Everything that happens here is completely standard. It doesn't mean we like all of it, but it is all completely standard. Let's jump in. Here is when he is first read his Miranda rights, and Danny Rodriguez says, you know, I'm always told I'm not supposed to talk.
I want to talk to you guys, and in the past, lawyers have always told me, you know, you don't say anything. We're not going to help you.
Mm-hmm. Well, look, by signing this, you're just acknowledging that you read your rights and that you're willing to talk to us at this time. Just because you signed it doesn't mean any of these rights go away. These rights are always with you throughout the entire process that you're in the legal system, okay? Does that make sense?
All right, so totally standard. Danny signs, acknowledges that he's been read his rights, and then does proceed to talk, although he seems sort of hesitant. In this next moment, the officers do something that's very, very typical. And I'm not saying this is good or bad. It's very, very typical. They say, listen, we want your side of the story, because right now we're getting everybody else's side. And we want your side of the story. The implication is always that you can help yourself by telling your side of the story. Now, defense lawyers will tell you, it's never in your interest to just start talking in this way. You really want to make them have to prove their case against you. Now, this guy ultimately admits what he did, and there's video evidence and whatever, but just merely, you know, for people saying, oh, well, he's being tricked. This is typical. We want to hear your side of the story. Every defense attorney I know would say, get a lawyer. Don't say a word and get a lawyer. Yeah.
This is an opportunity here for you to let us know and help us understand, because right now we don't frankly understand exactly what happened from your perspective.
Right.
And I think that there's an opportunity here for us to get clarity on what went down and what you.
And these are always the terms that investigators use. This is an opportunity for you. Most people hear opportunity. That sounds good. We can clear this up. Let's clear this up. And good police interviewers already have the clarity they need from evidence and other people they've spoken to. And what they mean by clarity is getting you to admit that this is the thing that you did. So then they get on to some pretty interesting substantive stuff. Why did Danny Rodriguez start going to rallies in the first place? Trump rallies and other right wing rallies. Well, among other things, it was Alex Jones and InfoWars. Take a listen to this.
Mm-hmm. And so I think that's kind of what I'm trying to like understand.
I don't know what happened either.
I want to know that Danny though. I want to know that Danny that, you know, that kind of intervened in that situation. And I want to know how that Danny got to January 6th.
Your story is an important story.
I just think that...
By the way, that line, your story is an important story. I got a couple of emails from defense lawyers who said, without saying anything about this particular guy, oftentimes people in these situations don't really understand what's going on, and that the detectives are there only if they believe you did it to be able to build that case against you to ultimately have this go to trial and get a conviction. This idea of your story is an important story. More sophisticated individuals. I mean, listen, if I was sitting there, I would go, stop blowing smoke where, you know where. An important story. Do I look like an idiot to you? But it works. And that's why they say stuff like this is an important story.
You seem crazy or like a conspiracy theorist because you guys are, it's going to come out and I'm going to get locked up because I believe this and it's going to put me in jail.
Okay. So continuing to ask those questions And he does, for the most part, continue talking about it. And then they get to this part about Alex Jones. Let's take a listen to that.
We've done this for a long time. We've talked to, like I told you, we talked to a lot of people. And a lot of people are worried about being judged when they talk to law enforcement, that we're going to have an opinion. Mm-hmm. And I'm telling you right now, we don't hold judgment over you. We want,
right,
we want
to be the jury and the judge. And
no,
it's going to be a
DC
judge.
Even as a fellow human being, right? That's what we're telling you. We're looking at you today as a fellow human, as a fellow citizen of this country, as somebody who has lived here and put an investment into this country of your work, and you grew up here, and look.
I don't have any loyalty to any other country, just America. And this is all I know, and this is all I want. And I don't care about any other part of the world except for our team.
So how did the Danny that stood on the line in between law enforcement and Antifa BLM, how did you get to that point? What happened in your life? Like, how did you start going to these rallies?
InfoWars.
And just
InfoWars? So like Alex Jones stuff? Yeah, okay.
Alex Jones and InfoWars is what started to radicalize him in this direction. Now, maybe the most contentious aspect of this is that his lawyers are now claiming he signaled he didn't want to talk by shaking his head at one point during the interview. And I'm going to show that to you. And this is pretty early on. And so his lawyer is asking that everything, including the eventual confession I'm going to play for you, be thrown out. Now, I'm going to play the video for you where he shakes his head. He absolutely shakes his head very slightly. And then he does continue talking. I'm going to tell you in a moment the case that his lawyers are making. If you're watching, it's all, I've had to watch it 10 times to even see this. He very, very slightly shakes his head here. Okay, so let's pay very close attention and see if you can spot it.
You want to talk about that?
Okay, so he's asked, do you want to talk about that? It's a very, very slight head shake. Very, very slight. I'll play it one more time. It's barely visible.
You want to talk about that?
Because I tell you what. Everybody else is going to talk about that.
Yeah, I'm pretty ashamed.
So what happens is he's asked, do you want to talk about that? It's a very slight head shake. And then he's told everyone else is going to talk about it. And then he says, well, I'm ashamed. And then he continues talking. It's incredibly subtle. The argument that his lawyers are making is everything after that is inadmissible, because when a suspect says they don't want to talk, they can resume talking under their own choice, but they have to be the ones doing it. And this is the argument his lawyers are making. And because the detective then said, well, everyone else is going to talk about it, the lawyers are saying that is continuing to question him, even though it's not literally a question, that they continued even though he shook his head. This, I spoke to a couple defense lawyers. They're saying this is very, very 50-50. But that if they had to guess, this is not going to be a confession that is thrown out on the basis of that slight head shake. But that's what his lawyers are arguing for. Now, then you get to a key moment, which is where he says, yes, I tased him. He tased Officer Fanone. This is sort of like the key moment of the confession.
Okay. What do you want me to tell you? That I tased him? Yes.
Explain.
Am I a piece of shit? Yes.
Why did you tase him?
I don't know. I'm a piece of shit. I'm sorry. I don't know. He's a human being with children. And he's not a bad guy. He sounds like he's just doing his job. And
so here it starts to sound like there's some aspect of remorse. I'll get back to that. Here he says he was in D.C. because, as far as he knew, Trump called them to D.C.
How do you get to January 6th? Like, what else happens in that period of time?
Trump called us to D.C.
Tell me about that. How did he let you guys know to come to D.C.?
If he's the commander-in-chief and the leader of our country, and he's calling for help, I thought he was calling for help. I thought we were doing the right thing. I thought we were just... I had no plans of what was going to happen. I didn't know what was going to happen.
He believed Trump was calling them. He believed Trump was calling him. And then it did get emotionally escalated, and there was kind of this kind of breakdown feel to it.
Danny, did you feel like you were the 3% here? Like those people that stormed the Capitol, that those were patriots. Those are people who are doing that because they were the 3% that were going to free our country from fraudulent politicians and schemes of evil people, so that way we could have a republic that was going to be whole again. Is that what you thought? You thought you were that 3% guy. I know, man. I know. It's okay.
I'm sorry, guys.
No, we know. Look, listen.
I'm so sorry,
we know you thought that you were that 3% guy.
I'm so sorry. I did.
So this is interesting for a number of different reasons. One, this is just one story of the hundreds. There are hundreds of people like this who they believe that they were patriots. They believe Trump was calling them to D.C. They believe they were doing the right thing by tasering or tasing a police officer, and on and on and on. Number two, in moments, he sort of seems remorseful. But then in other moments, you realize he actually isn't. He talks about he and his patriots. Is there going to be room in the jail for the number of patriots that are there? He still continues to insist that they were doing, generally speaking, the right thing. So what this one story tells us, I don't know. But understand that when we say stochastic terrorism, people see these messages, all this different stuff, and it leads to real world action. It very much does. And every single one of them now is a case involving investigators, the judicial system, etc. And the people who incited this stuff, at least so far, have suffered no consequences whatsoever. We're going to follow this case and others as they go forward. It's great to welcome to the program today Jefferson Morley, who is an author, editor of the blog JFK Facts, and editor of the Deep State's website. His next book is called Scorpion's Dance, The President, the Spymaster, and Watergate. It's great to have you on, Jefferson. Thank you.
Thanks for having me, David.
So the presidents for some time have opted not to release the so-called JFK papers. There was initially quite a long delay put in place in terms of releasing them to the public. Donald Trump and Joe Biden have taken positions on that have led to significant speculation about what may be in these files and these papers. There are a number of what we might colloquially call conspiracy theories that exist around the murder of JFK, as I'm sure you know, and the issue of the files has only fed that. Talk to us about what do we know about these files, and what are the reasons, at least as stated, as to their being kept private?
Okay, thank you, David. Let's step back and just look at what the law says. That it's a little complicated, so it's worth explaining to understand how we've gotten to this moment.
Yes.
So in 1992, Oliver Stone released his movie JFK, which was with an A-list Hollywood cast, a very smart screenplay, a very compelling piece of cinema, portrayed Kennedy's assassination as the work of a high-level conspiracy. This triggered outrage in Washington, indignation, severe attacks on Oliver Stone, which continue to this day, saying he had taken liberties with history and all of that. Stone responded with a very effective response, which is, if the government isn't hiding anything, why is it hiding so much? And he pointed out that in 1992, nearly 30 years after the assassination of the president, 80% of the government's records on the subject were entirely classified. He put that in the trailer at the end of the movie, and he said, if you're upset about this, you know, call your congressman. And so that resulted in a flood of mail to Capitol Hill, and Congress actually did the right thing. They said, we're going to release all these records to quell all this speculation. And so they passed a very strong law called the JFK Records Act. It passed unanimously. Imagine that, David, unanimously, something that would never happen in today's political environment. But pretty much everybody across the political spectrum agreed all JFK records should be made public. And so the law created an independent board to go and ask government agencies for their records. The board reviewed them and released them publicly. The agencies, the CIA, the FBI, the Pentagon, they had the right to request the delay of the release of certain materials based on their concerns about national security, privacy, and all of that. So that was a very effective law. And in the 1990s, we got a huge batch of new records about the JFK assassination, which really changed understanding, deepened our understanding of what exactly happened on November 22nd, 1963, when President Kennedy was assassinated. And these records illuminated a couple of things that were not known before, just how much the CIA knew about Lee Harvey Oswald. CIA propaganda operations around Oswald, both before and after the assassination. So we learned a lot from those materials. After 25 years, everything was supposed to be made public. Congress wrote in a sunset provision. After 25 years, the agencies have the right to delay release of information, but they can't postpone it forever. And after 25 years, everything should be made public. So 1992, you go forward, fast forward 25 years, October 2017, the final release of JFK records falls to Donald Trump. Trump goes on Twitter and says all JFK files have been released ahead of time. Okay. Not surprisingly, that statement was false. All the JFK records were not released, and they were not released ahead of time. When the dust cleared and we figured out what had happened, what had happened was Mike Pompeo, CIA director, went to Trump and said, we cannot possibly release all of these records. And Christopher Wray from the FBI said the same thing. And so they prevailed on Trump to continue to delay the release of this material, which by law was supposed to become public, for another 4 years. So we have some idea what's in those records. A lot of those records have been declassified, maybe except for a word or a paragraph. So we know something about what's in these records. 4 years later, the decision falls to Joe Biden last month. Late on the night of October 22nd, Biden, the White House announced that nothing would be released this year. The second time that the deadline written into the law, approved unanimously by Congress, for the second time, the federal agencies blew the deadline.
Right. And we kind of lost connection with there for a second.
Yeah. But all the records that remain.
Yeah, Jefferson, your connection kind of went in and out there. Your connection went in and out there. And so we got 99% of what you said there. Let me sort of frame up my next question here. Speculation, of course, is that the full release, unredacted of everything, would tell us the truth about the assassination itself. Whereas more measured perspectives are, well, there's potentially stuff in these documents related to, for example, Operation Northwoods or other things that don't really relate to the assassination itself. What do you believe is still unknown, so to speak?
Well, I think what we learned from the disclosures in the 1990s is that the official story that some guy came out of nowhere and shot the president for no reason, that story's false. Lee Harvey Oswald, the man accused of doing the killing, was very, very well known at the upper ranks of the CIA. So in my perspective, some people say, and people, it's a plausible argument, it's a fair argument, that they're hiding all of this stuff, but there's nothing really important in there, nothing really germane to the assassination itself.
Right.
Okay. That's a plausible argument, but I don't believe it for a couple of reasons.
Okay.
One, if you look at how much was hidden before now, the agencies lose the presumption of innocence because every step before this, secrecy has hidden highly significant information. So to say the last round of secrecy does not involve highly significant information, of course it's possible. I haven't seen the records. But based on the past history, I don't think that that's warranted. Okay. The second thing is that these records could, I'm not going to say they're going to rearrange our understanding of the assassination. People have deeply felt beliefs about the assassination and may not change their mind no matter what the evidence. But I think that there is evidence that will change, decisively clarify, I guess I would put it that way. So, for example, what do I think is in there? I think is evidence that shows that a certain group of CIA officers targeted Lee Harvey Oswald for operational purposes before the assassination. And if that's true, that could well be part of a conspiracy to kill the president. So I think that will it show, you know, what happened in Dealey Plaza? These records will not shed new light on what happened in Dealey Plaza. What they will shed new light on is what the CIA knew about the accused assassin and the circumstances of the assassination before and after Kennedy was killed. That's where we see evidence of malfeasance or misconduct. And that's what these records could decisively show.
Okay, so let's explore that a little bit. One very black and white story that some tell is the CIA ran an operation, directed Lee Harvey Oswald to assassinate John F. Kennedy. Okay, that's one story. What you're suggesting seems to be, it could be that Lee Harvey Oswald was not only known to the CIA, but was actually previously used by the CIA in certain operations not having to do with the assassination. Maybe the CIA even was aware that Lee Harvey Oswald maybe wanted to kill the president. I'm sort of just speculating here. And maybe the CIA didn't stop him or something. But you're not necessarily saying it's a directed assassination.
Well, I haven't seen the record, so
no,
I don't
understand.
Know.
I understand. Yeah, yeah.
What you're saying is possible, that what they're hiding is they're hiding incompetence.
Sure.
They're not hiding incriminating information.
Right.
Okay. I think that's possible. Again, I doubt it.
Oh.
Because first of all, if that was the feeling inside the CIA, like, oh, you know, we screwed up, we missed this guy, we should have, you know, we could have. You might see some trace of that mentality in the records, okay? There is no evidence to confirm that in the available record that's why they are doing what they are doing. So that's one reason why I doubt it. Hmm. Nobody in the CIA has ever said, oh, we screwed up about Oswald. If you look at their behavior, it is much more consistent with this guy is part of a covert operation that we cannot talk about. And so what I'm saying is I think there's an undisclosed CIA operation around Oswald whose purposes we don't know and whose purposes the CIA does not want to disclose. From there, if that's true, we will have a better understanding of how to assess the conspiracy question.
Let's pause our conversation there with Jefferson Morley. Full interview will be on YouTube. We'll take a quick break and be right back. So GB News spent days promoting a supposedly blockbuster, incredible, groundbreaking interview with Donald Trump conducted by British politician and broadcaster Nigel Farage. And I have to tell you, this is one of the most bonkers, off-the-wall interviews I've ever seen Trump do. It's essentially 100% an interview about cultural issues like cancel culture and what does Trump think about Meghan Markle. Antifa and Black Lives Matter comes up in this first clip. And even right off the bat here, Trump jumping right into police related stuff, which is just crazy because police were attacked by his supporters on January 6th. No mention or support of those officers. But plenty of mentions of it was actually Antifa and BLM who did bad stuff. Take a look at this just off the wall, alternate reality.
Now, either way, we've got Biden and Harris in office, and they've got plummeting poll ratings, and we've got a border crisis, as you quite rightly said.
Remember, everything here is sort of a lie. Plummeting poll ratings, still higher than Trump. and the border crisis, where essentially nothing has really changed since Trump left.
Law and order. The Black Lives Matter movement, which is now becoming increasingly, I think, political, don't you?
It's shocking that it started off, with pigs in a blanket, right? You know that, right?
Yeah.
You know the expression, fry them like bacon. And that was about our police, our great police. And all of
the great police, where Trump doesn't say anything about the police that were tased and et cetera on January 6th by his supporters.
This becomes mainstream? I don't really think so. And Antifa, bad, very bad.
Bad.
And they had Antifa in that rally. They had Antifa leading a lot of people on that day on January.
No evidence of that whatsoever.
And I will say that it's pretty incredible that nothing happens to them. But the other side, this has been going on for many years.
There is no evidence that Antifa individuals committed crimes on January 6th. That's why there are no cases against them.
They're not just about racial equality, then.
Well, I think they're about politics, but I think they're about a lot of other things. If you go back to their original founding and what they were saying, kill the police. What they're saying is kill the police.
I know.
And that becomes mainstream. Not good.
Not good, says Donald Trump. Next clip. Donald Trump claims that now we aren't globally respected anymore. We have objective data about that. The U.S. reputation was lower than ever under Trump. It has now recovered to some degree under Biden. Is Biden perfect? No. Is his foreign policy the stuff of dreams? No. But by every measure, the U.S. is more respected now than under Trump. But Trump doesn't care.
But Biden, G7, Biden turns up at the G7. And this was before he let everybody down in Afghanistan, and which leaves us wondering, where is America in the world now? I mean, we've got big threats, haven't we? We've got a lot of Russian troops on the Ukrainian border. Yep. We've got China, ever more bellicose in their statements about Taiwan. We've got Iran. I mean, can you believe it? Negotiations are going on this week with Iran, and the Israelis are very, very scared. Where is America in the world right now?
I think it's at the lowest point it's ever been at.
There is no objective way to defend that statement. It is objectively a lie.
I don't think it's ever been in a position like this. We're not respected anymore. I will tell you, there were no planes flying over Taiwan. And the name wasn't even mentioned. You didn't talk about Taiwan when I was president. It wasn't going to happen, what they're doing now.
Trump knows nothing about Taiwan. That's why he wasn't talking about it.
And they'll wait till after the Olympics, I assume, and perhaps something will happen. But it's not good if you're there and you have bombers flying over your...
So Trump just wrong. There is the reputation of the U.S. has started to recover. It's not perfect. It's not perfect, but it was at the bottom under Trump, where Trump wasn't even party to many important global discussions, including on climate, as we've mentioned before. Okay, next clip. In this one, Trump says something. Let's see if we can figure out what it is even that Trump is saying here.
I'm not a fan of hers at all. This
is the Meghan Markle clip. In this clip, Trump says he's not a fan of Meghan Markle. Okay.
I'm not a fan of hers at all. And I think she's very disrespectful to the queen that we just spoke about.
Yeah.
Who's such a great woman, who's such a great person,
right.
Historic person. I think she's very disrespectful to the royal family, but maybe most importantly to the queen.
And what's wild about this is, you know, Meghan Markle and her husband, one of the princes, I don't care about the royals. They made a decision together, right? I mean, about separating from the kind of traditional life of the royal family. But Trump's not a fan of Meghan Markle specifically. Kind of just all very weird. Then here's a strange clip. Trump says something was a big mistake. Let's see if we can figure out what it is that Trump says was a big mistake.
I heard you through Twitter. It was for you, you know, something that you used to massive effect. Oh, Jack Dorsey is being removed as CEO of Twitter because of shareholder pressure. But whether that means they'll improve as a channel or not. I mean, I was amazed the day that the Taliban, you mentioned Afghanistan a moment ago, the day the Taliban took over Kabul, I did put out a message that said it seemed ridiculous that their leadership was still active on Twitter. and yet you were still banned.
Well, they were wrong in what they did, and we're dealing with the United States president, who's obviously a popular...
So when he says they were wrong, is he talking about the Taliban or Twitter? Like, it's not totally clear to me.
President, from based on everything that you see, them and Facebook, and I think they made a big mistake. I think if they had it to do...
Okay, I guess he's saying if Twitter and Facebook had a do-over about banning him, I think.
Over again, they wouldn't be doing it. We get the voice out. We have to do it. We have an obligation to do that. But he's leaving. I guess it was probably enforced because they're down. And also, there's no excitement on Twitter anymore.
Okay, so I guess he's saying Jack Dorsey is leaving because Twitter isn't doing so well. It's all just very, what are you talking about, dude? Trump is asked about 2024. He seems to be signaling that he is running.
Why on earth would he consider going back into that hell again?
So I love our country. I brought the country to a level it's never seen before.
Right.
Then we had COVID come in, and then I brought it back, came up with vaccines that you're using, we're all using, the world is using, saved tens of millions of people throughout the world.
So now he's for the vaccines.
In less than 9 months, it was supposed to take 12 years.
Now, it was never supposed to take 12 years. We knew from the start these vaccines would be based on an mRNA platform. The platform had been researched for decades. Nobody thought. What Trump is saying is there are times in history where the development of some vaccines could take 10 to 12 years, often 6 to 8. Nobody ever thought it was going to take 12 years with the mRNA vaccines.
Just heard the other day they were expecting it to take 12 years. And everyone said it wasn't going to work, and they work incredibly well. We've done an amazing job. If you love the country, you have no choice. It's not a question. It's just this is a wonderful, beautiful life. But I like that, too, because I was helping people. That's why I did it. And I think you'll be happy in the future, too.
So Trump, again, with this idea of if you love the country, you got to run. And I think you're going to be happy in the future. He seems to be signaling he's going to be running. And then finally, no Trump interview is complete without Trump bragging about the size of his crowds.
So looking ahead, you know, from here,
yeah.
Is the message to look back at November 2020 and to condemn and criticize much of what happened?
Yeah.
Or is the message to look forward and try and make sure that weakness in the system can't exist again?
I think it's both. I think it has to be both. We have a base in Alabama, as an example. I had 69,000 people recently show up. Wherever I go, I think I'm getting bigger crowds now at the rallies. And you know the rallies because you've been to plenty of them.
Yeah.
I have the biggest crowds I've ever had.
When he says now, by the way, he hasn't done a rally in months and months and months. So a wacky, wacky interview. But the big takeaways, Trump's still bragging about the same stuff without any basis, and he seems to be leaning towards running in 2024. I don't want to spend a ton of time on this, but Joe Rogan seems to sort of have crossed the Rubicon in some sense, where Joe Rogan has always been interested in conspiracy theories. I also am interested in them. Joe Rogan seems to believe in more than I do, but there's a difference in what I'm going to play for you today and something like the moon landing was faked. Joe Rogan's new idea is that there is a concerted effort to restrict access to monoclonal antibodies so that people will get vaccinated, so that Big Pharma will make money. I'm going to explain to you why this makes no sense, but this is now over the line into something that is truly quite dangerous.
Here's the thing. I'm going to say this because it's true, because I've experienced it many, many times with many people that I'm friends with. They're withholding monoclonal antibodies. They're trying to stop people from getting them. There's not a shortage of monoclonal antibodies.
And so what does that do?
Monoclonal antibodies kills COVID like Raid kills roaches. When you get shot
so
up,
you
with
get it after you get so
yes.
You get COVID, then you get this.
That's what
treatment.
They gave Trump, and that's what they gave me.
Mm-hmm.
I got better quick. I got better fucking quick.
And Trump got better pretty quick.
Pretty quick, and he's old and fat. He's old and fat, and he got better in 4 days.
So why are they withholding it?
Because they want you to get vaccinated. That's what I think. I think they don't want there to be a very clear path where you don't have to be vaccinated, but if you get sick, you're going to be fine.
So, is it just the money going into the pharmaceutical companies that's driving people to want everyone to get vaxxed?
Or it must have an influence. It's also the narrative.
Right.
There's also people that have been vaccinated that don't want people to get away without being vaccinated, because I think they know they took a chance. I think secretly they know. Like, if anybody pays any attention, they know someone who's had a bad reaction to the vaccine.
So this really is wacky. Let's go through it piece by piece, right? So first, Joe Rogan says there's an artificial shortage of the monoclonal antibodies. if you research how the vaccines are made and how the monoclonal antibodies are made, right now, there is a much more limited ability to generate monoclonal antibodies for the same number of people as vaccine doses have been made. That's just a fact of production. So that the first thing is that there's an artificial shortage. There is simply not the availability because of the production process for monoclonal antibodies versus vaccines, widely documented. This stuff is all out in the open. You can find it. Then he says the monoclonal antibodies have you just get rid of COVID. It just cures you. We have randomized controlled trials with monoclonal antibodies. They are efficacious. It is not a silver bullet. It is not a silver bullet. And if you are in a situation where you need monoclonal antibodies, you are far better off being vaccinated. So understand that the two first claims, there's an artificial shortage, demonstrably untrue. It simply kills COVID. Not true. It's effective. It's an effective treatment. Okay. Also, by the way, then he goes into the financial. He says there's a financial. It must be. Jocko says, what's the point here? Why? Is it financial? And Rogan says it must be. The vaccines are made by pharmaceutical companies, which make money from vaccines. The monoclonal antibodies are made by pharmaceutical companies that make money from monoclonal antibodies. You can't ascribe a profit motive to one and not the other. It's for-profit pharmaceutical companies making both. So it's a wacky claim to make. And in addition to that, the vaccine, the Pfizer vaccine, is now fully approved by the FDA. The monoclonal antibodies are authorized for emergency use. When we say, well, we don't know, we really, I mean, if you want to make that case, we now know more from a regulatory standpoint about the Pfizer vaccine than the monoclonal antibodies. But that is missing. And then lastly, you know, everybody... vaccinated people want the unvaccinated to get a vaccine because they want others to take a risk the way they. That is crazy. That is crazy. There is no evidence of that whatsoever. And everyone knows someone who's had a bad reaction. I don't know anyone who's had a bad reaction. I mean, I know people who were flu-like for 24 hours. I was. My girlfriend's arm got red for a little while. For like 8 hours or something like that. I don't know anybody who's had really a bad. So it's so silly. And unfortunately, it's going over a line into something that now is getting much more dangerous than, you know, JFK or flat earth. Or not that Rogan believes all this stuff, but some of this stuff is more benign. This is very much not. We have a voicemail number. That number is 2192 David P. Here's a very aggressive voicemail question.
Yes, David. Just curious. I watch your show from time to time. I was curious as to why you never talked about Hunter Biden.
Yeah.
And all the millions of dollars that he has received from China and Russia, and the fact that that is probably why Joe Biden does not take any action towards either one of those countries because he has been compromised.
Yeah, listen, so first of all, most of the things that this caller said, who interestingly sounds a lot like Troy York and also calls from Illinois, but apparently is a different caller. First of all, those claims are essentially all unproven. It's unproven that Hunter Biden received money from those governments. There is an investment firm co-founded by Hunter Biden, which did have a consulting agreement with the mayor of Moscow. It involves a whole bunch of other people. There is no evidence that Joe Biden got any money or that Joe Biden is involved in any way. And most importantly, Hunter Biden isn't involved in the administration in any way. You know, Ivanka Trump, Eric Trump, Don Jr., they were highly present in Donald Trump's administration. They were sitting at the table. Ivanka sat at the table at, what was it, the G8 or the G20 or whatever it was, filling in for then Secretary of State Rex Tillerson. And these very same people that now want to draw some link to Joe Biden from things Hunter Biden did in the past, allegedly, and Hunter has no involvement whatsoever in Joe Biden's administration. Where were they on Ivanka, Eric, Don Jr. and Jared Kushner during the Trump administration? These people are pathetic, and there is really no what do you want me to talk about Hunter Biden? The guy's nowhere. He's not present in any way or involved at all. We've got a great bonus show for you today. I won't even tell you what's on today's bonus show. It's a good one. Sign up at JoinPact.
RCT, In Sound, from Way Out.
DJ Heim from Forest, and you're listening to 88.3 WRCT.
Yo, what's up? How y'all doing out there in Techno Land? RCT Techno DJs in the house. Oh yeah, bringing you the only fat beats in Pittsburgh. Right here on WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM.
Depose from the faint. Do you think I'm hot? You're listening to WRCT Pittsburgh.
Hey there, folks. Glad you could join me for all the best, the smoothest of the smooth, the cool and gentle sounds of what we call jazz. RCT Pittsburgh, jazz is a one-song word.
From New York, this is Democracy Now!
This is a really low moment, and it has forced a moment of reckoning for the abortion rights movement. And I think one of the things that stood out in the interviews that I did with dozens of people across the movement is that the failure to act with urgency on the erosion of the rights of poor people and women of color many decades ago helped lead the movement to the point where it is today, where it has lost so much ground on the issue of abortion rights.
As the Supreme Court looks poised to uphold Mississippi's 15-week abortion ban and possibly overturn Roe v. Wade, we'll speak to the nation's Amy Littlefield about the Christian legal army behind the Mississippi law, as well as anti-trans laws across the country. Plus, we get a remarkable look at the life inside Irwin County Detention Center in Georgia, the subject of a new documentary called The Facility.
How's everybody doing? What's happening here?
Somebody here says the fight for coronavirus.
I'm really scared I'm going to die.
This is what we came up with to try to protect ourselves.
The woman, they're going to go on strike.
And what happened to the Haitian asylum seekers in Texas, some of whom were whipped by U.S. Border Patrol agents?
My colleagues and I have been working for the last 2 months to liberate some of the same men who were under the bridge in Del Rio, Texas, 2 months ago and are now detained in this horrible detention center.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The Biden administration's prepared to reinstate the contested Trump-era Remain in Mexico policy as soon as next week after it reached an agreement with the Mexican government. This means asylum seekers who arrive at the southern U.S. border will once again be returned and forced to wait in Mexico while their cases are resolved in U.S. courts, a process that can take months or even years. Advocates warn Biden has expanded the program to now potentially include asylum seekers from the entire Western Hemisphere. This comes despite mounting reports of human rights violations and other grave dangers faced by asylum seekers while stuck in Mexico. This is a Salvadoran asylum seeker in Juarez, Mexico, speaking Thursday from a migrant shelter near the U.S. border.
I have been here 22 days. Being here for a long time is desperate. We have children, and we are here without our families. To stay here another 6 months is very difficult. Thank God we have food here. We have everything we need, but it is hard to be without our families.
Advocates have vowed to continue fighting Remain in Mexico. The ACLU's Immigrants' Rights Project said in a statement, quote, the reimplementation of this illegal and cruel policy will inflict on thousands of additional people seeking asylum the same harms that were well documented under its previous implementation. Horrific abuse, including torture, rape and death, and the denial of any meaningful opportunity to obtain asylum, the ACLU said. German leaders have ordered tough new restrictions for people not vaccinated against COVID-19 as Germany and many other European nations experience their worst surge of the pandemic. Germany's new